Eric, wake up. What's wrong?
Oh, Hank, I'm starving, man. I can't do this anymore. I can't sleep. My stomach's growling. This is awful. I need some food.
But how can you be hungry? We just had a bunch of wild berries for dinner.
Oh, come on, Hank. How many times are you going to tell you? I can't stand these berries anymore. I need something else.
Well, tomorrow we'll get up extra early, go down to the river, and scrape some moss off of the rocks.
Are you serious? Like, I really want to eat moss again. Come on. We got to do something. We got to find something.
What about that mushroom patch we passed earlier? Tomorrow we could go pick some mushrooms and have Presto turn it into mushroom soup for us.
No, Hank. I can't eat anything else that Presto makes. Every time he puts something in his hat, pulls it out, it's never what we expect. It's disgusting. I can't do it anymore.
Well, what exactly are you hungry for?
What do I want? I'm going to tell you what I want. Remember those big turkey legs that were at the amusement park before we got stuck in this realm here? That's what I want. A big, giant turkey leg.
Oh, Eric, you know they don't have giant turkey legs like that here in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, yeah? Maybe not turkeys, but I think I just found something.
Eric?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 18, and this week we're talking about the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon series, and we'll probably get into a little D&D talk itself. But before we get into that, let me introduce the host. My name is Sean, and as usual, the collector of collections, Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on with you, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm trying to be professional and get things on the first try like you normally do.
It is. This is a one-take show.
It is a one-take show. It will be this week because I do the editing, so we won't have a repeat of last week. Doors off again this week. He's recuperating from the Ohio Linux Fest. I talked to him a little earlier. He's kind of lost his voice a little bit, and he's got to set up his podcasting rig. So he's taking the week off. But don't fret, we've got an awesome guest with us this week. You may know him from the McCoy cast, the 80s anthology episode by episode podcast, or I don't know, maybe you heard of this little website called The Retroist, or I don't know, he's got a podcast, The Retroist, I think it is. The one and only Vic Sage. What's going on, Vic?
Hey, guys. Thanks for letting me be on the show. It's an honor.
No, thank you. Thank you for coming on. It's great to have you here, man. So just in case nobody recognizes the Vic Sage name, but I'm sure they do, but why don't you talk a little bit about what you do over at the Retroist and at McCoy Cast?
Well, sure. I do just stuff like Rob does and take cherished memories and share it with our readership over at the Retroist and hope that the people daily drop by and, you know, take a second for themselves and think, oh, I remember that. And, of course, on the 80s Anthology episode-by-episode podcast, I just kind of give the lowdown of all the talent in front of the camera and behind the camera and share my memories because Twilight Zone is one of my favorite things. So sometimes I knock that 1985 series hard sometimes and maybe too hard sometimes.
And you guys are going through every episode of that. Is that right?
That is correct.
Now, and on that, Doug always asks if you've seen that episode. And I don't think I've heard you say no on any of them yet. Have you?
There's a few that's odd. It's like I may have missed the first segment of the episode, or possibly the second segment, like last week. So, but yeah, for the most part, I you know, TV and movies have always kind of been my thing. So I have such strong personal memories with them all. So it's like,
yeah, and I can vouch for that because behind Vic is a sea of DVDs behind him. It's like I'm getting teased here. I have to look at Rob every week who flaunts his Star Wars collection, his Fisher Price Adventure People collection, and now Vic's got this like wall of DVDs, and all I have to show is like a handful of popped off Star Wars heads. So
I was gonna say, you know, if he treats DVDs like he treats his action figures, don't loan him any, Vic. I bet he doesn't put them back in the cases. They probably got smudges all over them, scratches. I wouldn't loan him anything, I'm telling you.
A couple scratches, it's okay. You just rub a banana peel on them and they're good to go. But But so, Rob, what's been going on with you? I seen you take a little mini road trip this weekend. Where'd you head out to?
I did. Well, it's funny, and a coincidence, I ended up out in Vic Sage's neck of the woods, which is basically, I wouldn't say the middle of Arkansas. Is that the middle of Arkansas, would you say, Vic?
No, it's northwest Arkansas.
Northwest. I'm kind of geographically challenged. You know, now with the GPS, I don't know where anything is. Now I went out to Bentonville, which is the location of the first Walmart. In fact, we went through the Sam Walton Museum, which is it was interesting to see. You know, they go through the birth, the growth of Walmart, and we went to the Crystal Bridges, which is an art museum. But my favorite stop of the whole trip was the Arcadia Retrocade, which I have done a podcast episode. This is my second time to go out there. It's a retro arcade out in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And they have my favorite business model, which is you pay $5 and then all the games are set on free. And so we took the kids out there, even my wife. You know, my wife's not really a big arcade. Well, she says, you know, I'm going to drop you guys off. You guys do your thing. And we drove by, you know, there was a big thrift store right down the street. She says, I'm going to go down to this thrift store. About 10 minutes later, I look and she's over on Centipede. She's like, I'm just playing one game. I want to play this real quick. And then I'm going, you know, and then I'm like, well, she must have left. And then I walk around the corner. There she is on Miss Pac-Man. So she kind of, she had her few, games that she wanted to play before she snuck back out of there. But, yeah. And so Vic, I know you had posted on the Retroist some behind the scenes pictures of when the arcade like was coming together.
Yeah, right? That's correct. It's an, arcade diary that I promise I'll get that fifth chapter up here pretty soon. But yeah, it's kind of a step-by-step, I mean, right from when, you know, the owner, the manager, you know, the grand poobah of the Arcadia Retrocade is Shea Mathis. And I just go step-by-step with like, oh, hey, this is all the work we had to do with, you know, building walls and drywall dusting and, you know, getting 4 pounds of it in our lungs and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you were there. You were there every step of the way, right? I mean,
yes, sir. Yes, sir. That is correct.
It's awesome to see. Those pictures were great because once you've been there, you know, you see the finished product and it's great, you know, but to see it come together, to have that vision to put it all together, I think that's really cool. And I think Shay has done an awesome job of putting everything together and keeping it all running. I mean, just running around and I mean, you talk about somebody who does every part of a business. You know, I'm talking to Shay up front. He's telling me about how he just acquired a kangaroo. They just got a kangaroo machine.
That's right.
Yeah, he's telling me about that. Then while we're talking, people come in the front door. He takes the money. Then he says, hey, I have to go over here. I have to do some important, you know, business things or whatever. I said, oh, I'll go with you. And then we go around to the party room where Shay's on his hands and knees spraying cleaner stuff, trying to scrape cupcake icing out of the carpet, you know. And then from there, it's to go back and make sure that everything's going well at the snack bar. So the guy literally just does all facets of the business.
Well, it's a labor of love, and Rob, like you said, I mean, I think everybody can see it, and that's one of the reasons it's, you know, knock on wood, it's doing so well. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a few of these, you know, I've had some posts, I've been to a few of these around, but that's definitely my favorite business model. I do like where you pay the one price and you go in and you can play everything. You know, I just went to the Galloping Ghost one in Chicago. The 1984 arcade up in Springfield. We've talked about that one before. So there's a few of them around, but, I think my personal opinion is that it's just that right time where it's not long enough where people have forgot what arcades were like, you know? But it's just been that, you know, people our age, like, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I just turned 40. So when I was a kid, I went to the arcades or whatever, and it's, I don't know. It's just good, clean fun. And it's something that now I could take my kids to and they could see that same type of, you know, the same atmosphere and play those same games. It's, an experience I never thought I would have is playing Rampage with my kids someday, you know, and there we were. Shay has a 3-player Rampage and the three of us were there. And I, I taught the kids that you could punch each other in the back when they're not looking. They did not know that. I teach them how to play dirty.
Well, I got to say, I wish I could experience the arcade like you guys have. We have nothing like that around here. You know, we have nothing. Chuck E. Cheese, Dave and Buster's, which was a good time. I had a fun time, went there a couple of weeks ago with my wife and another couple for dinner and Dave and Buster's, but it was actually a good time. I don't remember when I first heard about it. I don't know if I heard the Retroist talking about it, and all I heard was Fayetteville. So I was like, okay. I was really excited because my brother lives in just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And just east of Charlotte is Fayetteville, North Carolina. So I thought, great. Next time we take a trip down, I told my wife, I'm like, there's this arcade. It's all these retro games. You pay $5. You play all day. You can come and go. It's going to be great. I mean, my brother will go. We'll take the kids. And then, Vic, I think it was your first post. Like you said, you've done a few blog posts in a series. And there was one where it showed a receipt that was found there. And I'm like, wait a second. That's not Fayetteville, NC. And then it, you know, all came crashing down on me. And I was
See, it's that whole, it's the GPS thing. If it's not on the GPS, I don't know where it's at.
Yeah, so I was.
Sean, I'm sorry about that. I really am. I mean, you commented on one of the posts, and it's just like, oh.
Yeah, I was so bummed out. I'm like, man, I was so excited to get down there. I mean, to obviously visit my brother, but I thought it would be a great trip for my brother and I and my kids to go there, and I could watch my brother play Joust like I did as a kid. But
now, how far are you from Fun Spot, which is up in New Hampshire? Wearsby or Laconia? Is that far?
It's got to be a good 7-8 hours, I would think, maybe.
I don't know. See, when you're in the Midwest, everything up there, it's all kind of one big New York, Maine, New Hampshire. It's all
I mean, I'm in New York, but when I tell people I live in New York, they all, you know, they think, oh wow, you're New York City. No, I'm in Buffalo. New York is down here. I'm way over here by Canada. You know, I'm like 10 minutes away from Canada, like 20 minutes from Love Canal, an hour from
Niagara Falls. You're by Niagara Falls, right?
Yeah, Niagara. We'd go to the falls, and then on the way home, we'd get off at this LaSalle Expressway, and we'd go drive through the old, I'm sure you guys have heard of Love Canal, the chemical that would, the neighborhood. You ever heard of Love Canal or?
I haven't.
It was a town that they had buried a lot of toxic chemicals, and basically they evacuated the whole entire town. And we would, when we were in high school, we would drive through there, and you would just drive through this ghost town of a neighborhood. And every couple houses, not even every couple, like every 20 houses, there'd be someone still living there. I mean, if you Google it, I'm sure there's got to be a Wikipedia page or something on it. It was a pretty big deal, I believe, in the late 70s.
Sounds like the plot of every third zombie movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Right. The dumped chemicals, the people leave, and then there's always those few that stay behind, and they're never better for it.
Yeah, yeah, right. So that's where I live. There's no arcades. We've got the falls. Canada's right there, and since I used to go there in high school, they've torn the entire town, like it's a couple blocks really is what it is. All the houses have been flattened, but it was kind of a weird experience. But anyways, no arcades for me after that sidetrack. But so yes, this episode we are talking about Dungeons and Dragons, the animated series. Rob, why don't you give us your summary on this?
Okay, well, this is an easy one. Shortly after boarding a Dungeons & Dragons ride at an amusement park, 6 school-age friends are magically transported to the mystical world of Dungeons & Dragons. In this new realm, these 6 kids, Hank the Ranger, Eric the Cavalier, Sheila the Thief, Presto the Magician, Diana the Acrobat, and Bobby the Barbarian, spend their time fighting the evil Venger and avoiding the 5-headed dragon known as Tiamat while being led through adventures by the magical and mysterious Dungeon Master in hopes of someday returning home. So that's basically it. And you know what? One thing I like about this show right off the bat is that basic storyline is in the introduction to the show. It's summed up in, I don't know how long the intro is, maybe 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds. But no matter what episode you see, You watch the introduction. You watch these kids get into this theme park ride. They somehow magically gets transported, you know, through a portal to the world of Dungeons and Dragons. You see them get their weapons. You see them fight Venger. You see Tiamat show up, and then Dungeon Master shows up and says, I'm your guide. So no matter what episode you start with, you get the whole story right there in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And, you know, watching it now as an adult, I watched a few, you know, a handful of episodes the past few days. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, they come out and there's Tiamat. And, you know, no one really questions, like, their clothes. What's going on? They're just like, oh, okay, I'm a ranger. You know, I'm a I'm a thief. I mean, I know it's an intro, but, you know, as a kid, I thought, wow, that'd be great to be able to be transported through this portal to this other dimension. But I, as a kid, I'm thinking this it'll never happen to me because I don't do roller coasters. I'm a complete wimp when it comes to roller coasters. So like in one sense, I'm like, man, I hope I can get transported. But then I'm like, but reality setting in as a kid's reality. I'm like, well, it'll never happen because I won't go on a roller coaster.
Right. So your reality is the opposite where your friends all go on this ride. And then you're like, I'll meet you at the exit, guys. And then, you know, an hour later, you're like, where's Hank? Where's Eric? Why didn't anybody come out? What happened?
Yeah, Eric, I wouldn't be so upset about, but yeah.
Yeah.
But he's got the charge card. You got to keep him alive.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, he's definitely the rich friend. He was the guy, I'm sure, that bought everybody the drinks at the amusement park, you know?
That's why he's there, yeah.
He probably paid every, he probably got free admission from like somebody his parents knew or something, you know? He's like, I'll take you. I don't know. He doesn't really talk like that. I'll take you all to the theme park.
Sheila's like, I really want that big teddy bear. And he's like, I'll just buy it, honey.
Exactly. You don't have
to play a game. But, and I also noticed today when I was watching the intro, how it says Dungeons and Dragons trademark, right? They have the TM right on there in the cartoon intro. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is something I think we're going to talk about a little bit later, but it definitely was a tie to, you know, it was an actual trademark of Dungeons & Dragons, and there were a lot of parent groups that didn't like that. Dungeons & Dragons had kind of a bad reputation, I guess, at that time. It was a little, you know, it was during this whole, we talked about from the music, I think they called it the satanic panic, you know, of, are your kids going to be devil worshippers if you play Dungeons and Dragons or whatever. They were worried about, parent groups were worried about the violence, you know, associated with the show or whatever. I know that they had some different rules that they had to follow when they were making the show. And so, yeah, it was a little bit, it seems now that we've gone back, I know all of us have gone back and watched, you know, the show again over the last week or a couple weeks or whatever. But now it seems silly that there would be controversy about it, you know.
Well, did either one of you, you know, have your parents say anything about it, or did you? Cause when I was a kid, I didn't know any of that was going on. My parents really didn't care. I mean, like Vic, were you just like able to sit and watch it, and nobody bothered you about like all the violence or anything?
Yeah, I did. I actually was raised by my father. In fact, our neighborhood, I wouldn't really call them friends, but neighborhood acquaintances, two kids that lived up the street from me, Steve and Sheila, their parents were totally just like, you're going to be watching what on this Saturday morning? So it's a Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. Oh, no way. So they would go out and play and run down the street to my house, and we would watch the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon at my house.
So yeah,
my dad was like, I'm fine. Yeah.
You're the heathen that would let everybody come over, the safe haven. Yeah. I was really lucky because pretty much my entire, all through school, from grade school all the way through high school, I was a straight A student. I never got in trouble. I never, you know, so, you know, I would go ask my parents like, you know, hey, in fact, when Dungeons and Dragons first came out, I asked my parents, I was like, hey, you know, these neighborhood kids are playing Dungeons and Dragons. And my parents were the ones, my dad was like, oh, this sounds interesting. He went to the store and bought the basic set, came home. We all, me, him, my mom, my little sister, we made characters and we actually played Dungeons and Dragons one night. And my dad's like, this is a devil worship. This is just kids playing games or whatever. And he gave me the set, you know, but so they were informed, I guess, as parents, but they were pretty liberal as far as that kind of thing, you know, and that repeated itself as far as, video games. I remember, coming home one day with a, Ozzy Osbourne t-shirt. I traded somebody, something at school for an Ozzy t-shirt. And I came home and I asked my parents, I was like, is it okay if I listen to that? And my dad's like, yeah, you just got straight A's. I don't think you're biting the head off of bats or anything. I think you're all right. So for me, as long as everything was okay with everything else, they didn't mind.
Yeah, I didn't catch any flack or anything for it. I mean, my mom was the same way. My father was working two jobs, but my mom was like, I mean, go ahead, watch it. As long as you're not doing anything bad, what do I mean, really, if you look at, I mean, and I know people have made the reference to like the Roadrunner and stuff like that with violence. Like it really, I don't know. I didn't really think it was that bad. Even watching a couple episodes this week, my oldest son has watched the entire series. We got a few years back, he would watch it. And my youngest started watching it, I'd say a couple months ago, he'd watch an episode here or there. And then the past couple days, he's watched a few with me. So, and I didn't, different from some of the episodes we've done previous where we maybe thought, oh, this isn't bad. Oh, no, you can't watch this. So,
how does he like it? Does he think it's a pretty good show, or is he kind of like, it's dated?
You know, my oldest son liked it. He wanted to keep watching it. My youngest, I asked him yesterday, I said, so you like this? And I'm all standing there proud. And he's like, no, not really, but I'm not doing anything. He's five. He's like, I have nothing else to do. So I was like, all right, sounds good to me.
Yeah, I actually watched it with Mason. He's the same age as your oldest. He's 11. And yeah, he got into it. He liked it. I think that maybe audiences, or when I say audiences, I mean kids, are more advanced than they were at that time, because I watched it, let's see, well, it came out in 83, right? So, I mean, when it started, I was 10 and was 12, 13, whenever the series ended. So, you know, I was roughly that same age, and I remember thinking that it was more than a kid's show. Like, it was kind of serious, and there were all these things. And now, when I watched it over this past week, I'm like, boy, this show is hokey. But, and my son kind of thought, he was like, well, why don't they just, you know, why don't they just kill Dungeon Master? And get, you know, I mean, he's like, he's kind of like, just moving past, like, you know, there are plots of some of the shows were like, we watched the one with the white hair, where basically Dungeon Master tells the kids that they will run into Venger, who is their nemesis in the show, but they will know him by his white hair. And of course the pun is that he's carrying a white rabbit, which later they fight and they beat you over the head. I mean, the minute that he shows up, my kid's like, oh, there's a white hair, but the kids don't figure this out for another 10 minutes in the show, you know? And then they're like, he goes, it's not a rabbit, it's a hare. And then they still don't put two and two together. And at some point I'm like, these are kids walking around with lethal weapons and nobody knows this. This is a white hare, you know? And, so some of it, I think, moved too slow for kids today, but he still enjoyed it. You know, it was just, I don't know, maybe younger kids that would enjoy it more.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my kids go, they pretty much watch whatever I put in front of them, especially on the weekends, because now that school's in, we don't let our kids watch. Like when I was a kid, I'd come home from school and you watch cartoons. Like, we don't let our kids watch cartoons during the week. It's, you know, you come home, you do school work, and then actually play or do something. Or, you know, on the weekends, it's kind of like, go nuts. There's the iPods, there's the TV, whatever. They watched it. My daughter said she liked it, but she'd rather be on the computer.
Right. Well, one thing, and my son kind of pointed this out to me, but it was really obvious that everybody's motives in this show are very simple. You've got, I mean, the kids, basically every episode they start off, they're trying to get home. And then you have Venger, who runs into the kids every episode, and he's trying to get their magical weapon so he could take over the realm. And then you have Dungeon Master show up, who, you know, puts them on some quest that the kids hope will lead them home. but probably won't. And then, you know, and then he says, oh, then there's Tiamat, and he just wants to kill everybody. So, but so it's almost like when you're an adult and you watch Scooby-Doo and you realize that every episode is identical, you know? So there are some interesting ones, especially later in the series of Dungeons and Dragons, where they were trying different plot ideas and stuff. But for the most part, you know, when you start an episode, you know what you're going to get. They're going to be wandering around. They're going to have some little adventure. They think it may lead them home, and it's probably not going to.
Right. Exactly. Well, why don't we get into some of the characters and who the voice actors were that played them?
Okay. Well, first there is Hank. He's the ranger, and he has a magic bow that he has given. All the kids, whenever they show up in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons, Dungeon Master assigns them a role and a magic weapon. So Hank is the ranger. He has the magic bow, and he is voiced by Willie Ames. Everybody probably recognizes. I recognize him from, what was the Charles in Charge? Is that right?
Yeah. Of course, I think he's Bible Man, isn't he?
I think that's right. Yeah. Eight is Enough, but Charles in Charge is what I know him from. You have, Eric, who is Cavalier. He has a magic shield that can block attacks for people, and he is voiced by Don Most, which I instantly recognize. You recognize his voice instantly from Happy Days.
So Ralph Mouth, wasn't he?
Yes, Ralph Mouth. And he sounds, it's the same character. He is definitely the comic relief in the show. You have Sheila, who is Thief, and she has a cloak of invisibility. When she puts her hood onto her cloak, she can turn invisible, and she is voiced by Katie Lee. And I looked her up on IMDb, and she is definitely one of these people that just has a list of credits from voice acting. But the one that really surprised me is she was Ralph the dog in Muppet Babies.
Whoa, I did not know that.
I didn't either. So that I was trying to place it. She almost, I wouldn't say 50-50, maybe a 60-30 split where she voiced male characters versus female characters. So I thought that was really interesting. And Sheila kind of has her own fan base of people after the show. There are a lot of, Sheila fans.
Well, I mean, Sheila was looking good. Let's for a cartoon. I mean, she had the high boots on. She had the go-go skirt.
She had the whole, you know, what's interesting. I don't want to derail, but if you notice in the opening credits, they're all wearing the same type of colors and clothes that they end up in later in the episode, you know. So she has on this purple shirt, you know, when she gets on, and then when she comes out, she has on the purple cloak. It's interesting that I know a lot about her clothes and nobody else's. but yeah, so Sheila, there's Presto. He's the magician, and for his weapon, I wrote down, he has a wonky magic hat, which, doesn't always quite perform. It does, sometimes when they're in a bind, the hat gives them what they need, but more often than not, it gives them something. It doesn't seem like he's quite mastered the magic of the hat quite yet.
He's a hedge wizard. He should be feared.
That's right. And he's portrayed by Adam Rich, who's also from Eight is Enough.
Nicholas,
yep. Then you have Diana. She is Acrobat. And she is given a magic staff, which she sometimes fights with, but more often she uses to pole vault over things. She is voiced by Tanya Gale Smith, and on IMDb, she has exactly one voice credit, which is Acrobat from Dungeons & Dragons. So I don't know her story. And also Bobby, who is Sheila's little brother. He is the barbarian, and he has a magic club, which is a lot like Captain Caveman's. I think he beats things. He causes things to, you know, earthquakes and things to shake or whatever. And he was voiced by Teddy Field III, and he also has basically no other credits.
And is the smallest barbarian I've ever seen.
Yeah. I don't know that he would instill fear in too many people. And then the last couple here, we have Dungeon Master, which is voiced by Sidney Miller. We have Venger, which is Peter Cullen, and I think Vic has a story about Peter Cullen here. We have the Shadow Demon, who is this shadowy figure that follows Vinger around and is kind of like his seer. He flies around and tells Vinger what's going on in different places. And then we have Tiamat, which is the giant five-headed dragon that's always trying to kill everybody on the show, and Uni the Unicorn. We're going to talk about Uni here in a minute also, but Uni and Tiamat are both voiced by Frank Welker. And both Frank Welker, who does Tiamat, and Uni and Dungeon Master, no, not Dungeon Master, sorry, Avenger by Peter Cullen are both very famous voice actors. And I think, Vic, did you have a list of some of the things that Frank Welker has done?
Yeah, guys, let me say, to call Frank Welker legendary, I think, is an understatement. He has 698 voice credits, which is a lot. But, I mean, he's been on, you know, Scooby-Doo, Pac-Man, G.I. Joe. He did the voice for Stripe and on Gremlins. Transformers, he's the voice of Megatron. And, I mean, goodness gracious, he did also the voice of Soundwave, Skywarp, Rumble, Frenzy, Laserbeak, and Ravage. He's been on the Super Friends, and, I mean, he's still working. I mean, you look at the Internet Movie Database, and it's truly, like, 9 pages long. So, I mean, the guy is, I mean, he's one of a kind. Long may the day be when he passes away. I mean, he is a legend. He truly is.
He's definitely the go-to guy in that industry for sure.
Yeah, it's like you need a dog, I got you covered. I mean, even it's on Raiders of the Lost Ark. He did the voice work for the monkey in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
Yeah, Bad Dates. So, well, no, real quick, I want to share this story I heard from Peter Cullen. He was talking about a recording session for Transformers, the Generation 1, and he said that between breaks of the recording session, Frank Welker would go and use the phone, the payphone, and just, you know, talk to people during their, you know, like 15-minute breaks. The thing is, though, there was no payphone. He just did the voice. He did the sound effect for the payphone, the dialing, and then he would carry on a conversation with himself for 15 minutes.
Wow.
And sure, he was doing it, you know, to get a laugh, but he was doing it just because he was practicing.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that people, I mean, if you've watched cartoons, everyone's heard something that Frank Welker has done. And I'm not positive, so don't hold me to this, but I believe he still does the voice of Fred, right? On Scooby-Doo, do you guys know? Or
I don't know if he does the voice of Fred. He probably does. He probably does. I know he still does the voice of Megatron in the new Transformers animated series.
Yeah, I have to check on that. I listen to another podcast. It's Rob Paulson.
Oh yeah, it's a great podcast.
Yeah, and I swear he's trying to get Frank Welker on all the time, and I don't know why he doesn't want to come on. I think he almost makes it seem like the reason he doesn't want to come on, not because he's too good, but because he feels not worthy or something. Like, he just feels like, right, it's making too much of a fuss over him, I think is what it is. He's having trouble getting him on. He wants to get him on. He keeps promising he's going to get him on. But I swore he said he still does the voice of Fred. But I could be wrong. I'll have to double check on that. But definitely does a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Now, one of the things that bugged me about these different characters, especially as a kid, and I told you that I had played Dungeons & Dragons as a kid, is that many of these character classes, when this show started, were not playable character classes in Dungeons & Dragons. You couldn't be a barbarian. You couldn't be an acrobat. So these were things that weren't around. You couldn't be a ranger. You couldn't be a cavalier. But a lot of those were added in AD&D in the Unearthed. Is it Unearthed Arcana book, which came out in 85. So it's like, I honestly thought whenever we started this that those classes were added because, you know, it's like a tie over to AD&D, but it turns out that it looks like that the show may have actually inspired classes that were playable later in the game.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't get to play, D&D when I was younger, but my father, due to the TV show, of course, did get me the Dungeon board game.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, then after that, you know, and of course, thanks to the show, I mean, I really you know, I became a huge fan, and we actually found one, the basic set, at a garage sale.
Nice.
And picked that up, and man, it was just like, I love this. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, it was a Fantasy Forest was kind of a even more of a kid version of Dungeon, and I know for a fact that the D&D animated series characters were featured in that board game, because there was little PVC guys.
Yeah, I remember those. And those are actually, later on, I went on eBay and I looked for some different things that are related to the cartoon, and we'll go through some of those, but there's not very many, and that's definitely one that does show up.
Yeah, I definitely wish I had it.
We had like an electronic type of D&D game. It wasn't chess, but it was, I don't even know what it was. It was some weird game with like little pewter figures that I did not play the game the way it was. I just took the figures.
Yeah.
I mean, just play with the figures. I don't know what it was all about. To this day, I don't even know what it was. I'd have to dig around my mother's basement to see if I could find that thing.
Yeah, it was electronic Dungeons and Dragons, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. I didn't have it myself, but yeah, it's one. I think it was one of those things like you had to program it. So you were playing, like putting your pieces, and when you would put it onto a spot on the game board, because it was kind of a lifted up game board. It was a big piece of plastic.
Yep.
And I guess it would like do a sound effect or something. I don't know. I didn't have it.
Yeah, so
it's like Dark Tower.
Yeah, I was like 10 years old. I'm like, I wasn't into computers back then. I'm not programming anything. Let's just, okay, slide the board across. Let's battle with these
figures. It's a volcano. Boom.
Started sticking the pewter guys in my mom's exercise bike chain and popping their heads off.
He was a very, very violent. Violent child.
I definitely played rough with my toys, so I don't have any collections left, really. What I want to ask you guys, and I'll start off with you, Vic, of all these characters, I don't think anybody had any great magical item that they were given, but of any, what if you had the choice, if you were in that position, like which one of them would you have chosen?
Oh, I would have actually chosen the shield. So
really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, think about it. You've got the defense, you know, protecting other people, you know, and not to mention yourself, you know. I mean, it's like, oh, well, turn the corner. There's Tiamat. Pull up the shield. Hold them off. Run away.
Right. All right, yeah. Okay.
Oh, though I would totally scrape that chicken off the shield, though. There's no way. No way I'd put that chicken on that thing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That's an unfortunate logo.
How about you, Rob? What would you have picked?
Oh, I'm definitely a cloak of invisibility type of guy. Yeah, I would definitely be the one that would, you know, there would be like, all right, the six of us, here we are. You know, and we found Venger. And Venger, you're going to have to take on the one, two. Hey, there's only five of us. You know? And my feet, they see footprints going the other way, baby. I'd have that little cloak on. But I think that would be, I think you could do a lot more, you know, go invisible and then sneak around and do little things, you know. I don't know, but yeah, I think that would. Although, I don't know, the magic bow,
yeah,
seemed like it was pretty versatile. You know, I know there were like he made fireworks at one point to light up the sky so they could see. He rescued, like he shot Bobby, and then he like rode it like a lightning bolt. You know, so there was a lot of things he could do with that thing. But yeah, and I have to go with the invisibility, I think.
Yeah, that's where I was leading to. I was kind of thinking the bow, but then I thought, like Vic said, you know, with the shield, you have no defense with the bow. You're constantly on the offense, and and then with the cloak, you know, you could be a puss like you and put it on and run away. But I look at it like you kind of can be on the offensive and defensive with it. See, that's mm-hmm. that's the thing with Vic's choice, the shield. Like I totally get that, but I want to attack too, and there's nothing you can do with the shield, you know. So at least with the invisibility cloak, you know, you can take the rob route and hightail it and leave your friends behind, or you could like throw it on and like just sneak around and attack that way with whatever you could grab. That's
sure,
how I look at it.
Bonk somebody on the head or whatever. Yeah, yeah. I can see that. What's the worst? What's the worst one? Do you think
the staff?
Yeah, I think that's gotta be like. You know, what it made me think of was, remember the Wonder Twins, you know, mm-hmm. and you got one twin, you know, they do their magic, their thing, and one gets to be an animal, and you can be like a ferocious lion, and the other one has to be is always like a bucket of water.
Water. Right, yeah. I think everyone said it's water.
And I thought at some point there had to be this conversation that doesn't appear on screen where they, you know, they get these weapons. Of course, in the intro, they're dropped immediately into battle with Venger and Tiamat. But you've got, you know, I mean, just imagine you've been transported to this magic world, and all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, here's a five-headed dragon, and I'm not wearing what I was wearing a second ago, and I have a magic bow. Time to start firing, you know. And then, you know, that, and you've got Eric, and he's like, oh, I've got this shield that will protect us from these fire attacks. And then you've got this girl, and she's like, I got a stick. I'm gonna jump around on this stick.
And it can adjust in size for whatever you need.
Right. You know, it's so, I mean, after that first battle, you know, I mean, all that, your adrenaline goes away, everybody sits down, and then she's got to be like, guys, what's up with, why did I get a stick?
Like, wow, you got a bow. That,
right.
That just looks like a bow with no string.
In the intro, she avoided that poison cloud big time. So, now what would she have done if she had the cloak? She would have got caught in that poison cloud.
Not if she'd have been me. I wouldn't have been anywhere near that thing. But yeah, you know, there's this conversation where she's like, okay, so you got to, let me get this right. We gave the 8-year-old a club that could break open the earth. And I got a stick. I don't know. It just seems like she might have got the raw end of that deal.
Well, yeah, and you got Hank. I mean, what do you think he was thinking? He gets a bow, but there's no like string or whatever you would call it. But, you know, let's call it a string. So he just like makes the motion, like, thanks, Dungeon Master, makes the motion. And then he's like, oh, whoa, it really does something. Like, Dungeon Master just like, you know, fear not, Ranger. And just throws in this thing. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll just pretend I'm playing bows in here. Oh, whoa, it just really shoots, so.
They all had a very shallow learning curve. You know what I mean? Like, you know, here's a bow. Well, here's how that works. And then there they go. You know, I mean, there's no instruction manual for these things.
Yeah.
You know, so. And I thought, you know, I feel bad a little bit for Sheila. And I did read, there's a trivia thing on IMDb where it says that Sheila is not referenced as Thief anywhere in the show. It's only in the intro is she called Thief, but no one else. The whole rest of the show, like Dungeon Master, will refer to Eric as Cavalier or Hank as Ranger, and they call him Ranger, but they never call her Thief. They always call her Sheila. And I thought Thief was definitely a playable character in Dungeons and Dragons. You know what I mean? There was a valid. You would have a thief in your party for picking locks and doing things like that. But that's kind of a bum. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know what that would be like today. Like you show up and you're like, all right, I'm a fighter. Well, I'm a hobo. You know, like, why would you be, you just, I don't know. It just seemed a little bit like that's another bad card to draw would be thief.
Yeah, when I used to play Dungeons and Dragons, like I never would want, my neighbor would always want to be a thief. And I never wanted to be one because you could only wear like leather armor, I think it was. Like that was the, right. You know, and I was always like, screw that. I want to have some heavy armor, but I want to be able to kill things. And the thief always had his like, you know, hang in the background because his, you know, his armor class was basically crap because he's wearing leather.
And a slingshot. And a slingshot and darts.
A short sword, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would always, when I was a kid and we would whisper things to our dungeon master, like if we wanted to try something, you know, so I was always whispering and then he would roll the die and everybody'd be like, what's going on? And they would say, nothing, you know, and I'd do that 2 or 3 times. And then then he would say, all right, well, you just noticed that, Rob is picking your pocket. I'd be like, what? How did that happen? So you can only roll over 10 so many times, apparently.
Well, now, do you guys remember seeing any type of advertisement for this before the show, before the premiered?
No, not really.
You know, I have some comics from around that era, and I have seen some comic book ads, so maybe that was the market, but I don't remember anything as far as, like, television or anything like that. What about you?
Well, I remember it, and it could very well have been, a Marvel comic. But Eric... I mean, you know, it might be a Bill Sienkiewicz that did the artwork on it, but Eric is writing a war horse. And I mean, and it's definitely his war horse. I mean, if I remember correctly, which I may be wrong, but it even has kind of the same color scheme as him. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he was on top of the hill, you know, and the horse had one hoof raised up, you know, and Tiamat was in the corner. And I was just like, wow, man, check that. I mean, it's a knight or something, or, you know, I'd had no clue what a cavalier was. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, when the cartoon started, I was like, well, where's his horse? Where'd that horse go? That horse was awesome.
And you saw, and this was like in a comic book, you said, or a magazine?
Yeah, I believe so.
Like
I believe so. So either that or it was some kind of, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if Comic Scene was actually being published at that point.
Yeah, I really feel like they missed the market on the toys on this. I know there were some AD&D toys, and I have some Dungeons & Dragons toys, but as far as, you know, these characters, like I said, I looked on eBay, and I know that they made some in other countries, and I got some prizes. We'll talk about that in a little while, but, you know, I mean, this is 83, 84, 85. I mean, you're on the end of, you know, 83 is Return of the Jedi. So you've got that third wave of Star Wars figures coming out. You have other, you know, the Fisher-Price, we talked about those, the Adventure People. I know that I had Clash of the Titans figures from that era. I mean, this is a big era for 3¾-inch action figures, and I just can't believe that they didn't have, you know, didn't release all these characters like that.
Yeah, they definitely missed the mark on this. 100%. You're absolutely correct. I mean, there was too much going on back then for movie toys and cartoons that there should have been more. And like you said, we'll get into some of the figures that actually are out there, but they definitely missed a mark.
Yeah,
and I'm sure somebody is, you know, kicking themselves in the ass for that one a few years later. They're like,
I know.
Damn it.
I would have bought them all then, and I'd buy them. I know. Yeah, you know. I mean, for all the terrible ones that were out there. Because I would have bought them then, and I would have bought them again now. So,
yeah,
I'd be paying way too much on eBay for carded figures right now.
Yeah.
So I think you mentioned, or I just mentioned on the dates, but the show ran three seasons, 83, 84, 85. There were 27 episodes. It also re-aired on Fox Kids, and so this was where a lot of people, before the show was released on DVD, and we can talk about the sets that were released, but it did re-air on Fox Kids, and so a lot of people, when it re-aired, taped those on VHS, and so those were available, being traded around. In fact, I bought, right when eBay first came out, one of the very first things I looked up was Dungeons & Dragons, and I bought a bootleg, like 4 VHS tapes of all the originals, and I paid so much money. It was so ridiculous.
Do they have commercials in them though?
They do.
That's awesome. See, that's so worth it to me. I almost would rather have that than the DVD. Like, mine are the, you know, from the re-aired Fox DVDs.
Okay.
So I'd rather, honestly, I'd love to have that with the old commercials into them. Yeah.
And I know that there is a I don't think I wrote down anything about this, but I know that they changed. I don't know if it's the show's intro.
Yeah,
they cut it on the Fox re-hearing, right? So it's a little bit different. I don't know if it was shorter or what. Vic, you might know.
I think they even just it's like the beginning of the intro, and then they start showing segments from the episodes.
Okay. So yeah, that's definitely from a collector's standpoint, that's definitely different. And then on the DVD side, you know, we said there's 27 episodes, but one thing about this series is that it doesn't really have a real ending. And there was an ending planned. Sean, did you watch any of that about what's that episode called?
I've
got to make you ahead, say
then.
It.
Yeah, the Requiem. Yeah, because you know I had trouble with Requiem. Requiem. Yes. I was talking to Rob the other day, and I could not get that Requiem, and I'm assuming he can't either. But you know what? I went onto YouTube. I started listening to it while I was putting laundry away. Which I seem to be doing all the time because, as my wife pointed out, if there's a TV on, whatever I'm doing goes into like super slow-mo and takes me like 5 times longer than it should. So I was trying to listen to that, and I got 3 kids. I kept getting sidetracked. So I've not been able to listen to the the entire thing, which I've meant to do for a while now, since I had heard about it on the Retroist did a episode on this series itself, and he talked about it, and I've always meant to do it, and I thought I should probably listen to it, get prepared for our own podcast, but no, I failed.
What about you, Vic? Have you listened to that episode? Or
I have actually. My DVD set has it as a special feature,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, I think that was probably one of the greatest special features, you know.
It is. It's closure to the entire series. You know, there's a lot of this is I guess I don't know if this is necessarily a trivia fact, but there are a lot of television shows that would end you know, their series on a spoiler. I know one that's infamous is ALF, where, you know, at the end of season 4 the UFO is coming down. We don't know if Alpha's going to go home or whatever. And so you're left with this big cliffhanger. And then, you know, so that was used as a bargaining chip to bring the show back for another season. And in that particular instance, it didn't work.
Yeah.
So the show was canceled. And so there was never any closure. You don't really know, you know, you're just kind of left with this cliffhanger. So I don't know if that was intentional with Dungeons and Dragons, if they, you know, had said that they were working on a last episode or whatever, but and it does kind of make it nice because you can really watch the episodes in any order. I mean, there's not a lot of continuity, you know, mm-hmm. between from one to the next. It's, you know, you have your little set adventure or whatever. So that Requiem, in a way, I'm glad that they didn't do it because, you know, you just every week you would watch a new episode and see what happens to the kids.
Yeah, you're right. And they were all just the you know, 22 minutes, not at the same thing, but the same kind of formula. You know, Dungeon Master pops up after about, you know, 2 minutes into the episode, completely, you know, screws with their mind, making them think that there's some hope they're going to get out of there if they find some, if they can figure out the riddle. They figure out the riddle, but lo and behold, they still are in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you talked about the episode with the white hair. You know, I didn't watch the entire series, but I watched some. I kind of bounced around from different seasons and everything. And one of the episodes that stood out to me was episode 23, The Time Lost. Now, first, let me just say, like, as a kid, I think we all love this as a kid. And speaking for myself, it's not that I don't like it now, but compared to other things like Cloak and Dagger, the movie, like, I can watch that now and just completely get sucked in. Like, this is just like nostalgia from being a kid, but it's harder to actually be like, all right, I'm going to sit down and watch Dungeons and Dragons, a cartoon.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but this episode, really, I was just like, oh wow, Rob, you gotta watch this episode. Because it's like Venger is like, I believe, creating like a portal to let in somebody from our world, or the actual character's birth world, as they would say. And so this pilot comes in from what would be modern day their time, 80s, with his jet and everything. And then you have Shadow Demon, who is like, you know, Venger's little, you know, nasty sidekick guy.
And really scary, I might add.
Yeah, he is.
That is true, yeah.
And he tells him, you know, that's not the pilot he wants. And so actually what his goal is to get a pilot from like World War II to come in. Because what he wants to do is basically go back in time in our realm, I guess you'd say, and screw up the way time is so that these kids' parents don't meet there and the kids are never born.
Right.
You know, this whole elaborate thing. I mean, even though Venger's like this most powerful guy, he can't kill these kids, so he's got to kill them this way. And he gets, so he finally gets this World War II German Luftwaffe pilot come in, and who ends up becoming friends with all the kids, and particularly with not Sheila, but
Diana. Yeah.
Diana.
Right.
So who's the black girl in the group?
Right.
Now, you know, these aren't my feelings, but it's just like knowing the history of like this Nazi guy. It's like, okay, of the group, that's probably not the one he's going to pick to have some connection
right.
with.
Right.
You know what I mean? And overall, Venger tells this guy, like, look, I'm going to send you back with this modern jet, and I'm going to implant the information into your head so that you can go back in time, and basically you have the single weapon that can win the war for your country. I don't see this Nazi guy getting all connected with them and ends up taking this jet and destroying the portal.
Well, not only that, but he, you know, when he meets the kids, and you got to imagine, it's not like he's had a long time. Like, he was flying a jet in World War II, you know, and all of a sudden he flies through this portal. He's in this world, and then he's like, I'm in the Dungeons and Dragons world. I did a terrible Nazi impersonation. But and then they're like, they welcome him with open arms, you know, because they are 40 years past World War II, you know,
right.
They're from the 80s. So they're like, oh, well, that's ancient history. But this guy was in the middle of World War II. And then he's like, oh, well, and he rips off his German insignia and throws it in the river. He's like, I didn't want to be in that war anyway.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, what's funny is I always enjoy, and from a goofy standpoint, that kind of cartoon or sitcom logic, you know, and we've talked about it before where, you know, like, I'm just making something up here, where somebody breaks a glass and then to cover up the glass, they get a broom, and then to get the broom, they have to go to the store, but they didn't have enough money to go to to buy a broom at the store. So they steal a broom and they get caught for stealing. And, you know, so the whole episode hinges on the thing that you could have, when the parents came home, you could have said, oh, I broke a glass. Oh, okay. And there wouldn't have been an episode. You could have circumvented the entire thing by just using this logic, you know? And so I did enjoy looking back, because as a kid, you don't see that. As a kid, you're like, that's what I would do. I would go steal a broom and I would sweep up glass, you know? But to see like Venger, where he's like, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a pilot to go back to World War II. And
what, is Venger German now, too?
Yes. He's like,
Venger is actually Hitler.
I send them all back. So he, in my D&D, they're all German. I don't know why. This whole plot is so ridiculous that he's going to bring back a pilot from World War II to go back to, and but send him back with a modern jet so that the Germans will win World War II. Like, he's like, oh, well, I'm going to screw up the whole space-time continuum for the history of the Earth, but at least it'll kill these six kids.
Yep.
And maybe he should just learn how to fly the jet and shoot the kids, you know, or or just crash it into where they're at, or when they're watching the plane, shoot them with fireballs. Or, I mean, just, it seems like there's a lot of other options. Like, that was a pretty far-fetched way to get around to.
But like you said, as a kid, you don't think of it that way.
Oh, no. Face value, you're like, oh, my God, they're going to win World War II?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's very.
I mean, Vic, to ask you, like, you know, watching it now, like, how do you, I mean, am I wrong? Like, do you, like, on Tuesday nights, watch like a couple episodes every week, or are you the same way where you're just like, you know, it's a nostalgia thing. I, you know, what are your feelings on it now?
I have a tendency to watch a lot of animated series. I picked up a Tailspin season one on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a great show. It really is. I don't know. I am probably like a filmmaker's best friend. And what I mean is, you know, if I like Pacific Rim, if I go and see Pacific Rim, you know, for the most part, my brain just goes, entertain me. So, you know, I mean, it's not that I don't, you know, find some faults in things, but, you know, I can watch D&D quite a bit. Now, of course, obviously, you know, there's certain episodes that I like more than others.
Right.
You know, now I will say this, definitely as a kid, I could tolerate uni a lot more than I can now. So.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I could not tolerate uni as a kid, and my feelings only grew every time. Like today, I'm watching. I'm like, shut that damn horse up.
Somebody tell Frank Welker to be quiet.
Oh my gosh! Right. But I know what you're saying, and please don't take that as like I was like, you know, making fun of you for liking it, because I'm I have Boomerang. I don't know if you guys have the channel Boomerang, but like the Smurfs will be on, and I'm like, come on guys, let's watch the Smurfs. They're like, Dad, the Smurfs suck. I'm like, are you kidding me?
See, I was totally fine with the Smurfs until, you know, they took up 9 hours of NBC back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, then it was just like, oh, I'm going to watch Rubik the Amazing Cube for 30 minutes.
Right. The thing about Uni, there's one episode I was watching, and they're, like, walking through the desert, and they're, like, talking about starving, and I'm like,
eat the horse.
You got a rack of lamb. You got a rack of ribs falling you right there.
I mean, rip the horn off. You got that magical item and throw it in your backpack and eat it.
It's worth 150 gold pieces, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Little Bobby can earn some experience for a change. Let's go. Yeah, I was like, I'm telling you this. I don't want to say the first thing, but that's on my top 10 list. I get that cloak of invisibility. They're like, where's Uni? You know? I come back. I'm like smacking my lips.
You pull your invisibility cloak hood off and your face is covered in blood. I don't know.
Barbecue sauce, right? Everybody else is in survival. I'm the only person in the realm that somehow gets fatter. I've got like this, like a giant, you know, unicorn drumstick, which I'm going to say is delicious. I don't know, but I bet you unicorn is tasty.
Did you guys ever, I just went blank. The co-creator of Dungeons & Dragons, you know, it's Gary Gygax and, rats. I hate getting old. Well, did you ever, this guy got in trouble because at a convention he was wearing a specific pin for this panel talking about D&D, and it said F Uni.
Really? And he caught crap for that?
Oh, yeah, he got in a lot of trouble. Yeah, Gary Gygax was very angry with him. I don't know if it's like they stopped talking to each other over it.
I want that shirt.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I have a heat press. I may make that shirt. But I might have to do a little Photoshop with like a bloody horn coming off that or something.
Hey, we don't know. Real quick, Rob, well, I don't know. I don't know if we want to spoil it or anything. There's a pretty important thing that you find out in that, Lost episode, Requiem.
Oh, it's from 83. Go ahead and spoil away.
Yeah, we're done with spoilers. Go ahead.
About Venger.
Yeah, so actually there's two things that we find out in that episode. And the first one that we find out is Venger is actually, all right, this is a spoiler, so if you haven't watched Dungeons & Dragons since 1985, might want to cover your ears at this point. But we learn that Venger is actually Dungeon Master's son.
Yeah.
Who has turned evil at some point. And so we learn that. And also, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but what I took away from that was that Dungeon Master pretty much could have sent them back at any point in time.
Yeah.
That's what I got from that.
He was teaching them important life lessons, like how to avoid gator men, you know?
Right, yeah, or how to deal with orcs and, and to avoid white hairs. But basically, at the end of that, he sends them back, and so, and it's not even, I guess it kind of has that Wizard of Oz vibe where you're like, well, you had the power all along, you know, that sort of thing. But that was the first thing I thought was, what a jerk. You've had us walking around all this time, you know. But yeah, so we do learn that Venger is the Dungeon Master's son.
Well, the real question is, though, would they go back? I mean,
That's true. We don't really know at the very end. Throughout the episode, throughout the series, there were several examples of them almost being back. You know, there were... I know there was one where, where Eric turns into a bog beast. I don't know if you saw that one, but he basically turns into a life-size frog looking thing. And, so at first, you know, they open up a portal and it's only going to be open for 60 seconds and they all go in, but Eric is going to basically be a bog beast if he comes back. And so he, you know, has to go back to the realm of Dungeons and Dragons to be turned back into a human. So they could have all left him. And I don't know. I mean, that's some difficult, especially for, I don't know that that's necessarily realistic in the confines of the show, seeing as that these are all, you know, young teens. Like, if I was 15, well, I already told you, I mean, I'm 40 and 5 minutes ago, I told you I'd have on the invisible cloak and I would have ate uni. So I don't know that my morals are necessarily on the chopping block here, but, you know, to be in that position where you've got one foot in, you know, back home, and then it's all of you except for one friend. And, you know, I might have done the thing where I like act like I fall through the portal. Like, I'm like, whoops, I fell back to Earth. Sorry. Sorry, Eric. You know, I don't know. But that happens a few times, you know. And so at the end of Requiem, like Vic said, we find out that there is a portal home, or what is their alternative? They're going to stay and continue fighting or whatever. And so we don't really know.
Make the realm safer, I suppose.
Right, right.
See, I could see them all staying but Eric. I mean, he was just so selfish of a person, you know, and I've heard, you know, Eric and Hank, you know, rolled as the leaders, but I can't, I mean, I wouldn't chalk Eric up as a leader at all.
He might want to be, but yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Him and Uni, just eat them. Just like that movie Alive with the airplane. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Uni, the special episode of Dungeons and Dragons where they're they're ambushed by frost giants and they have to eat Uni and Eric to survive. Yeah.
See ya.
Hey, I will tell you one thing that I found by looking around on the internet is that there have been over the years multiple efforts to turn Requiem into a full episode. And it's all fan, you know, fan done, but there's one guy who's been working on it and he's actually hand drawing the animation in the style of the show. But I think it's kind of, I mean, like they took the storyboards because their storyboards, this episode, I think Vic mentioned is an extra on the D&D box set, the original release of the D&D box set. There's a few releases. But there are storyboards and that version is on, YouTube. You can find that on YouTube, but someone has started basically turning that into an actual episode. They're doing the animation. And then I found references to someone else who's actually doing it in a 3D animation.
Wow.
Type style. So there's some efforts to do that. I haven't seen any finished products, you know, so who knows if those will ever come to fruition, but that's kind of interesting to see.
Oh, oh yeah. The fan base is still there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really, really, popular. Well, let me ask you guys. So did you play Dungeons and Dragons or Advanced Dungeons and Dragons before you watch the show, or did the show kind of make you want to get into playing it, Vic?
So I wanted to play it if I can learn to speak again. And that was because of school, actually. There was a couple of people at school that were playing, you know, basic D&D. And, you know, I was an ostracized kid, you know, still am. So, I mean, I would watch them and just go, wow, that's amazing. Now, how do you guys determine on where you just shot that guy with an arrow? And it was basically, you know, get away, kid, get away. So, but when the show came out, yeah, like I had mentioned, Dad picked up a Dungeon, the board game, and that went really well. And so then we did a garage sale, and my dad was really trying to get me to purchase an old toy, actually, that he was really fond of. And I saw that they had this at the garage sale, and that I was dead set on, you know, bringing it home, and I did. So, and it was awesome, and I still have it. So,
what about you, Rob? Were you playing already, or?
Yeah, you know, I think, well, I talked about getting that basic set, and that would have been right around the time of that show. So I was definitely into that. I had neighbors across the street. I had an older neighbor that lived next door who was kind of like our little neighborhood dungeon master. You know, he was the guy that had all the books. And, he had played, with his older, you know, like I said, this guy was probably maybe 4 years older than us. So he played and we would watch and then he would, you know, let us come over and let us like roll up characters and stuff. So, I was exposed to it pretty young, but I was definitely, into it. And as a kid, I think, I talked about this a little bit. I did a whole episode of You Don't Know Flack about Dungeons and Dragons, but, So I talked about this a little bit, but when you were young, we weren't really that worried about the rules. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we would make up our own rules, and we had all these different, you know, silly. I mean, at one point, you know, we would like make our own weapons, or we would make our own. At one point, we had like, we were incorporating people from other TV shows. We had a giant battle between, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Thundercats, you know, and some adventure thing. But so even before we had found advanced Dungeons and Dragons that incorporated some of this stuff, we were, you know, tweaking, saying, okay, well, if you were a fighter, but you had a low intelligence and more strength, well, then you could call that a barbarian. Or if you had, you know, maybe a certain amount of this or that, you could be a ranger. Or if it was somebody you didn't like, you would give them a stick and they could be an acrobat. So, but yeah, so it definitely did influence us as far as playing D&D for sure.
I had watched this show before I started playing, but my brother, kind of the same situation as you were, my older brother and my neighbors were already playing before the show came out. And I always wanted to play with them, but they were like, no, you can't play. And they literally made me wait. They wouldn't play a campaign for a year, but they pretty much up here, you know, like October, November till spring. I mean, you're not going to be outside unless you're sledding or whatever. And they would go in my neighbor's basement, and he had a wood burner, and they had a big like dining room table that downstairs, and they would play, and they would let me watch. I was able to hang out, which is, you know, pretty cool for being the younger brother, get to watch my brother play. Like, I wanted to play, and they're like, no, you need to kind of learn the game. And by no means did I ever master like how to play the game, but they weren't going to let me just jump in, you know? So I had to kind of sit back, but that was great too. Even though I wasn't actually playing and rolling the die or anything, it was cool seeing how it worked and how your imagination would just like completely let go into this game, you know. And even though I'm not playing, I'm seeing these characters. And I believe the one campaign, it was Keep of the Borderlands or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Borderlands, yeah.
I believe that was the first campaign I seen him play. And so when the series came out, it was about the time when I was able to actually start playing with them. So it was all about the same time, but man, it was great.
My dad had had met this guy through BBS's back then. It was when we had our Apple II, and it was you know, one of those things where when you wanted to trade software or whatever, you would go over to that person's house because it was faster for us to drive, you know, 45 minutes away and trade programs than it was to try to do it over the phone lines. I mean, it was, you know, modems were so slow back then. And so we went over to this guy's house, and my dad and this guy were trading software. And in my head, this guy was an adult, you know. I mean, and now I know this for a fact. I know he was going to a four-year college, and he was living just off campus in an apartment. So, I mean, how old could he have been, you know? But he had this whole library of D&D manuals. And not just that, I know he had Car Wars and a few other things too. And so my dad and this guy would go, you know, trade software and talk about computers and stuff. And I was still a little kid, but I remember he had, it was the first time I'd seen them. I think it may have been the first time I saw a D&D stuff at all, but he had the monster manuals. And I didn't know anything about D&D or whatever, but I'm looking at this hardback book. It was almost like you discovered this whole world, and you're looking through it, all these monsters and, you know, looking up, I mean, demons that had names. It was almost a little scary as a kid, you know, like you're seeing these things in a book. But I think that's probably the first time that I ever saw like the actual monster manuals, you know. And this was like the old school, the original, you know, old artwork, like late 70s stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Like
all the
Bill Willingham art and stuff like that from, mm-hmm, yes, from Fables. Yeah. So
all the books that like my brother would play with and everything, they were all AD&D books. He had the, you know, the monster manual. We have the Troll Underground, kind of shows the different levels of Earth, you know, that one, the monster manual 2. And he still has them. And I had looked for him in my mother's house in the basement. Like I said earlier in the show, my brother was in North Carolina. And so pretty much my brother has him for ransom. He honestly could care less about him anymore. He has two daughters. They're, you know, one's in college, one's about to graduate high school. They don't want anything to do with that stuff. So I had said, like, look, Scott, I would love to have these books. Am I going to play again? Probably not. But I would love to have them. You know, I don't have a collections or anything, but those are my brother's books. I could buy them on eBay, but I want the actual books that I played with, my brother had. And so he basically was like, look, you haven't come down. They always come up here for like Christmas and summer. And the way my vacations worked out, I haven't been able to get down there in a few years. He's like, look, you come down here, books are yours. You can take them home, but I'm not bringing them up. You got to come down and get them. So we are going to North Carolina for Thanksgiving this year. He sent me pictures of them, kind of like, here they are, total ransom type of thing. So I'm hoping after Thanksgiving, I'll be driving home with some nice old books.
I still have all mine. I still have all my old AD&D books. I have all my dice that, you know, everybody had to have in your own little Crown Royal bag. I didn't know what Crown Royal was, but I knew you had to have a Crown Royal bag, this little purple bag. Yep. That's what everybody had to put your dice in, you know. For me, what I had was my original books, my player's manual. I had all the basic sets too originally, but when I started playing AD&D, my player's manual and Dungeon Master and that Unearthed Arcana that I mentioned, that was the one that added like barbarians and cavaliers and acrobats. They all still have the Toys R Us price tag on them. So all my D&D stuff came from Toys R Us, and I think the books were $12.99, which now would probably be a $20 hardback book, but I had all of those. And the other one that I got that we loved at the time, and this is like I said, when you're 12, there's really no logic or continuity in your D&D world. You just throw everything in there, right? Was we bought the Oriental Adventures. Which, because that added ninjas and samurai, we're like, hell yeah. So, yeah, I always had an awesome party with like a bunch of barbarians and a bunch of ninjas. So we just went around fighting everybody and picking their pockets, you know. But I don't know if you had the same experience, but as we had other people, like eventually people would lose interest with D&D. Like they found all these other silly things like cars and girls and
girls.
Whatever,
you know? I was going to say, yeah, girls. Right?
And so as they would lose interest, they would be like, well, hey, do you want, you know, my books or do you want, you know, whatever? And so, so I ended up with like multiple, monster manuals or whatever. Like I had a new one and an old one or whatever, because as other people got out of it, you know, they would just be like, well, here, there was no eBay or Craigslist back then. You know, I mean, really, you know, you would sell it for a couple of Little Debbies in the lunch line or whatever you could get. But yeah, so I ended up, I've got a big stack of books out in the garage. You come here for Thanksgiving, you cannot touch any action figure with a removable head, but I will let you flip through Dungeons and Dragons manuals under close supervision.
Deal.
All right.
Now, did you play more, or did you, you know, take on the role of Dungeon Master? Or is it just kind of a 50-50?
Well, for me, it was probably 50-50 because one of the things that we didn't really, I mean, like when we talk about like having a campaign, like how you're really supposed to play where you would have a dungeon master and a bunch of people, we didn't really have that. So what I had was like one friend, my friend Jason. So, you know, I would roll up a couple characters, he would roll up a couple characters, and then we would spend the night with each other. And we would each make our own dungeons up, and I would take him through mine, and then he would take me through his. So, you know, we didn't really do that. I mean, especially back then, we didn't do that long-term campaign, you know. Now, as an adult, and this has probably been, gosh, it's probably been 10 years ago now, but I had some friends that actually were doing a campaign, like, you know, the real way how you're supposed to do it. And, so I ended up going, and we did it for, probably close to 6 months or whatever, but it got really hard to dedicate that time, especially with little kids and work. And you know, we would say, okay, well, it's kind of like this podcast where we say we're going to record for an hour, but really it's like 3 hours because you have that space on the beginning and the end or whatever. And so we would say, okay, well, we're going to play D&D. Well, you can't play D&D for an hour. You know, you have to, somebody's got to order the pizza.
Yeah.
And
you need a night.
Right. You know, and so it just ended up taking up a lot of time. What about you guys?
Sean?
Well, I was probably more of a player. I think because I was playing with my brother and the guys, they were all 3-4 years older than me. So we joked around everything, but they took it pretty serious is how things went. I did do a little DMing, but it was completely half-assed. I mean, we'd stay after school. It was me and a couple other guys. We'd stay after school at the music room, and the music teacher was like, kind of made a deal. He was like, look, I'll let you stay after school because I'm always here after school doing stuff anyways. You can use the room to play. But in order to stay after school, you have to try out for a choir. And I was my gosh.
You could have been the first Dungeons & Dragons opera.
Yeah. So we all had to join the chorus or whatever. And it sucked because I don't want to do it. But we did. So that we could, you know, stay in his room twice a week. And, you know, so it was kind of like 3 or 4 guys that really didn't know what we were doing once we were on our own. Like, these guys didn't really even play before. I was the only one who had played. And now I'm in a totally different situation where I have to be the one in control of how this campaign goes and everything. And the funny thing is we even got our teacher to kind of join in after a couple weeks. He can, you know, because he kind of become a little interested in what was going on. At first it was just like, all right, I can get a couple guys into the chorus because it's mostly girls, so I get a couple more guys sucked in here and, you know, keep them off out of trouble, they can stay after school. But then he kind of, and we actually got him to join a campaign for about 2 weeks. So that
awesome.
Was, yeah, that was really about it though. For my DM,
you have right there at your fingertips the makings of the first D&D musical. That would have been great. An ode to uni. You could have had uni, you know. You could have had Sheila, you know. I think you missed out. You missed out on an opportunity there.
Well, how about you, Vic? Were you more of a player or a dungeon master?
So in my younger years, I was definitely more of the dungeon master. It wasn't until, I guess, high school that I started becoming pretty much just a, you know, a player. And my you know, good group of friends here in Northwest Arkansas, for the longest time, I'm talking, oh, how about a campaign that lasted, you know, 6 years?
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and we, you know, yeah, and of course, when you get, you know, friends together, there's always goofing around. But in terms of the game, we definitely took it, you know, pretty seriously. I mean, when we role play, you know. So, you know, when I'm playing my dwarf, you know, due to work now, sadly, I'm no longer, you know, we can't get together. But yeah, I played my same character, Tarnak. So it was a dwarf
Tarnak
fighter.
Tarnak the dwarf, huh?
Yeah. It eventually became Tarnak One Thane. So, but, and then when we role played, I mean, like I said, you know, we did it seriously. So for Tarnak, you know, the character was Tarnak One Thane.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, it was good times.
Well, like you said, Rob, I mean, my wife and I think it was last year, we were at, you have Panera Bread out by you, right? Yeah. We were having lunch one day, just my wife and I, and there was a group, maybe 4 or 5 guys. They looked like they were probably juniors, seniors, maybe freshmen in college. It's that whole kind of timeline merges together, but they were playing, I couldn't hear everything, but they were definitely playing a role-playing game of some sorts. And I'm just, you know, my wife's talking, I'm just like, I'm just kind of like, I want to be over there with them, you know, and she, you know, kind of caught on to that. And I had said, man, I would love to just be able to just play D&D, you know, find a group locally in Buffalo. And she's like, well, check, I'm sure there's something. And there is, but you know, like you touched on, Rob, I mean, I got 3 kids. I work. My wife is a stay-at-home mom/artist. Mm-hmm. So she needs me to be able to get down to her studio at times and me take care of kids. It's just not in the cards or in the dice.
It's hard. It takes a lot of time, you know. And you know what? I had this one friend of mine, Steve, and he and I, his mom bowled on the same bowling league as my mom. So every Wednesday night, we were both at the bowling alley together from 6 to 9. And we found out that we were both into Dungeons and Dragons. And so we would take our books. Like, normally you didn't want to go to the bowling alley with your mom, you know, and have to, like, sit in the snack bar or sit and watch. Or, you know, they have, like, three arcade games and they're all broken or whatever. So we would go. And we found out, like I said, we were both into Dungeons and Dragons. So we would take our books and we would make characters. We would design, you know, dungeons. We would do all these things. And, you know, so we did this like for an entire however long a bowling season is. I mean, for most of a school year. And what's funny is we never played Dungeons and Dragons together. It's like we did all the things that were related to Dungeons and Dragons. You know, like I said, we made characters. We had come up with this whole, and this is another thing that when you're a kid that you just throw logic out the window, but we had come up with this whole island where there was pretty much every climate. So, you know, this was the icy north of the island, and then there was the tropic, and then there was the desert. And I don't know why all this stuff was on one island, but we had designed this and, you know, so, and that part of it at that age was just as much fun to us as the, the actual playing of the game.
I wish it was easier to do it. Maybe there's a lot of online games, right? Isn't there like different versions of Dungeons and Dragons that you can actually play online in the same sense of the role-playing game without the books and the manuals where everyone has to be there? There's got to be some sort of because like isn't like I don't and I'm embarrassed to say like I don't know like WoW and all that stuff. I mean it's after my time of playing games, but isn't that kind of similar to that or no?
I would say that World of Warcraft is the next step. Dungeons and Dragons, I guess, you know. I mean, what that's an MMO, you know, on a global scale.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know. To me, it's not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen friends, and I know people get into it and stuff, but for me, it was like what Vic was saying is you go, you meet all your friends, and all of a sudden, and then everything else gets put aside, and now it's not Rob from IT. It's, you know, Elric the orc or whatever, you know, and you get your characters and when you really did it right, it was a lot of fun because like, you know, especially if you were playing, like I always tried to play chaotic neutral or these type of characters that were fairly unpredictable, you know, or that were, you know, out for their own interests, you know, so but if you played by the rules, so you wouldn't say, well, I as a human being would not do this. You know, this is not a choice I would make. But this character, you would say, well, this is something they would do. And so, you know, when you were actually doing that role playing, that was, I think that's what made it fun for me. So I don't know that I would get that part of it out of the online stuff.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's more about just hanging out together and really getting into it and just being together in a group is what was fun more about it too. So, but to kind of tie it back into actually the series, you know, they did have figures. Now I know Rob, you did some research on some of the figures for the actual show, you know, like Presto and Eric and stuff like that. Like I didn't have that. And
nobody had these. That's the problem is that these were, Well, they were made in Portugal, and so they were only sold overseas, and that's why if you look on eBay, they're so expensive. I found a loose Presto, and that's the cheapest one I found. That one was $35. There is a set of all six figures that were released for $1,000. Now, this is eBay buy it now asking price, you know, for $1,000. It's not saying that that's what they would sell for, as far as the characters that were in the show, I mean, the main principal figures, there weren't that many. Now, I know Vic mentioned that, what was the name of that board game again?
Oh, there's Fantasy Forest that came with the little PVC guys.
Right. So you had little miniature versions of the people. And then I think you pointed out, Sean, that there were I know that there were some AD&D figures and stuff that actually made crossover appearance in the show.
Yeah. I was wondering that, and I saw the episode today. I think it was Warduke, who had like a blue helmet, and like it was like half of the side of him was like a blue lizard, and then the other side was like human. He had a big shield and everything, and I thought, because I had those characters, so I was thinking to myself, you know, I could have sworn I saw him in this, you know, in this show, but I wasn't sure. So I wanted to ask you, and I know, you know, the viewers aren't going to be able to see it, but maybe you guys can see my screen. Like I had most of, I had the Warduke character. I had a large Titan who was like in, he had like a yellow helmet.
You had that guy?
Yep.
Wow.
I had him.
Cause I know that, there's multiple, I have that paladin guy over on my shelf. but yeah, I think the Spartan guy, they came out in different waves, and so some of them are definitely more valuable than the other ones, for sure.
Well, in my true fashion, I have no more of these left, but I mean, I had the War Duke, I had the Titan.
Of course!
I had the Knight, and then I had, like, this little goblin in black with a blue hood. And
it was a thief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed you're missing Elkhorn. You're missing the best character.
The
dwarf.
Which one was that?
You're missing the dwarf.
you know what, though? In the picture, well, these aren't mine. This is an eBay picture, but I did have the dwarf, as a matter of fact. And I believe that he was in the Warduke episode that I saw, which was when Warduke captures Dungeon Master and holds him ransom to give to Avenger. But. So it was kind of weird because I kept wondering, like, where's this guy? And it was just kind of funny that I happened to watch that episode today. And then there is a dwarf in the episode, too. And I'm like, that has to be, like, the same spinoff character that I had. So I had those guys. And I will put a picture of those on the website under pictures and videos. Or there's a link to all that kind of stuff.
Well, I will send you a picture of this. Let me just pull this off the shelf here. This is...
oh wow!
I believe it's Dragone is how it's pronounced. D R A G O N N E, which is a half lion, half dragon. I have, and this is a boxed one that I have. So I Sean's never seen anything. Well, I'm sure you never saw when it's head attached.
But. No, I had that. I had that as well because the wings actually pop off too very easily. They're removed.
Yes, they do. Yeah, and I had this as a kid. And I have this picture of, my D&D stuff. Well, it's like this picture of me. It's really, this picture should just be called like 1985. It's me and I'm sitting there and I'm at my computer desk and I've got my Commodore computer and I have a spike haircut and, Vic's, holding
Hook-Hort.
another one of the D&D figures.
I had him.
Did you?
Yes. Damn it.
Sorry, Rob. Sorry.
I hate my childhood self.
Right, I know.
Destructive.
Sean can tell us at what temperature all these things burn. I'm sure they were all.
I had such anger issues.
The flame of Tiamat got them all. But no, it's this great picture of me, and I have like. There's like a Rambo picture in the background, and I've got a spike hair from Footloose, and I mean, just this, everything of the 80s is so awesome. And right on top of my computer monitor is the D&D guys and Dragon on there. So that's the whole point of my life is to recreate this picture, and then I'm done. I have nothing else left to do. So that's my goal.
Vic, what was the name of him again?
He's a hook horror.
Wow. That's awesome.
This is the same guy that obviously you can see, but the audience can't hear. This is the same hook horror I got when I got Elkhorn. I think it was like, I don't know, maybe my 12th birthday or something like that.
Really awesome. Those are the best, aren't they?
So, I'll try and get a picture of him for the site.
And
as well.
he did double duty as a Rancor monster too when I needed him.
Understood. Understood. That makes sense.
Wow, that's
and
nice.
You know, that is one thing, and we've talked about this a little bit before, but because these things were all basically the same. Now, the original, there were the 3 3/4 figure. Now, there were some, I think the Spartan guy, they also had like, I don't know, was it a 5-inch line or something? I think they were bigger, but the ones that were normal size, they were kind of interchangeable. So we talked about on the toy episode, I talked about how in the Fisher Price adventure people, you know, that I would bring in the green van and Han Solo and Chewie would go for a cruise, you know, and they needed a little break from smuggling. They would go down to the lake and take the kayak or whatever. And the same thing with the D&D guys and the Clash of the Titans. So in my world, everybody kind of, it was like D&D. There was just a different island and they all occasionally they got together and they would go hang out and share stories.
Yeah. I had the Clash of the Titans guys too. Oh my gosh, man. My mom, she was good to me, man. I just destroyed everything. Although I know who was the guy in Clash of the Titans, who had like the, you know, like the sheep foot or whatever, like the goat leg.
Calibos.
Yeah, I still had him. My kids played with him. And the remember when they had to cross the like the little lake and there's the skeleton? I had him. My kids have him. Yeah, why don't you go grab him and rub him in the face, Rob? Right. All right. But yeah, I had a lot of stuff, toys like that from movies. Lone Ranger, the original Lone Ranger in the 80s.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Now, and speaking of things that we were holding up, Vic a few minutes ago was holding up the D&D box set or the Dungeons and Dragons DVD box set. And there's a couple of different releases. And I have the same one that Vic has, which is a 5 DVD release. So what's weird about this show is that it's been released multiple times and they're all different. There is it was first release. There's a UK release, which is Region 2 in 2004. And that is a 4 DVD release. And what's unique about it is that it has all the original music from the original show. Then in 2006, that's the one that Vic and I both have. That's a 5 DVD release, and that's a Region 1. It's a U.S. release. But what they did is in some of the episodes, for copyright reasons, and I don't really understand why this happens, but they pulled some of the music out. And they replaced it with like generic, you know, it's not anything that I personally noticed. I'm sure somebody that really knows the episodes inside and out would notice it, but it's not something that it didn't detract from me personally. But this is the one, if you can find the 5 disc release, that's in my opinion, the best one, because that's the one that has all the extras. There's commentary tracks, there's director tracks. You know, there's all that kind of stuff. Then there is a Region 1 release. They released it again in 2009, and that's only a 3-disc version, so it doesn't have any of the extras. And actually, there's a lot of complaints about that one online for compression issues, stuff like that, you know, so not as good video quality. And then if you're just wanting to dip your toes in, and maybe you haven't seen the show at all and you want to find out about this, or, you know, you found out from the podcast or whatever, there is it's called the Beginnings, and it's kind of a best of, but really what it is it's the first 9 episodes. And I actually did just see this at Target for...
It's like $5. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost nothing. Right, so.
Well, that's some good stuff there. I mean, I don't even know what set I have. I kind of borrowed it. but I would like to get it. I mean, you can get it pretty cheap on Amazon. I was checking out some prices to, I don't know what exact set it was, compression or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's I'd like to just have it with my set, you know, my Star Wars saga and Back to the Future and stuff like that. Have it on there because, I mean, even though, like I said earlier, you know, even though now it's kind of like, I watch and I kind of laugh and chuckle but still, man, I hear that opening credit music and it's just like, man, I feel like I'm, you know, 10 years old again. So I loved it when my oldest son was watching it because he was genuinely like into it.
But, the greatest gift of nostalgia, you know?
Yeah. So. You know, it's funny. You know, he's older, so, you know, he kind of wants to know what's dad into or whatever. And I took him camping, a real quick story, and we got to kind of wrap it up. But we went camping, him and I, a few weeks ago, and we would listen to some Retroist episodes in the car. And my son was like, Dad, when we get home, because he has my old phone, he's like, Dad, can you put some of these on my phone so I can listen to them? Because he'll listen you know, when he's in his room playing Legos, right, he'll listen to music, or if he's swinging, he'll listen to audiobooks. And he was really getting into them. He really enjoyed them. That makes me happy. He's can appreciate some of the stuff that like us guys are into. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I don't think you had to be into Dungeons and Dragons. I don't think you had to be from the 80s. I think it's just, you know, it's a story that kids can, you can hop in, you can hop out anywhere. You don't have to, you don't have watched the first season to watch the second yep. season. You know, I think I had a good time going back and watching some of these again. Like I said, my 11-year-old did too. So, I do think as far as that aspect goes, I think it's fairly timeless.
Yeah. I think that's going to kind of wrap up our Dungeons & Dragons cartoon series and our Dungeons & Dragons talk. And if you haven't had enough of it, there's, you know, you can go back, like Rob said, he did a episode. It's 102 on You Don't Know Flack, which we'll have links for that. You can go listen to his episode of Dungeons & Dragons. The Retroist did two episodes. He did episode 129 is the Dungeons & Dragons, the animated series episode, and episode 34, Dungeons & Dragons, where he kind of covers the game and everything. So definitely go check those out. I'm sure you have already if you're here. But if not, check them out. I'd also like to say in closing, if you found us on iTunes, or if you belong to iTunes, you subscribe through iTunes, you know, if you could leave us a comment, that we really appreciate that, a rating or something like that. We're also on Stitcher. Go over and like the Facebook. We have a Facebook page. You can find that and our Twitter at Throwback Review. You can find both links to that on our website at throwbackreviews.com. And again, thanks to Pixelate for the intro music and the closing music. Find more of his great stuff over at soundcloud.com/retropeachy. So definitely check out some of his music. Rob, any closing words, anything you want to say, you know, about Dungeons & Dragons or where anybody can find any of those stuff of yours?
Well, you can always find me at RobOHara.com. And You Don't Know Flack is at podcast.RobOHara.com, or it's all linked to on the first site. And you can always find me over at The Retroist talking about things like Dungeons & Dragons and old cartoons and movies and things like, hey, speaking of movies, maybe we should do those fantastic Dungeons & Dragons movies for a throwback review. What do you say about that?
Crickets. There's noise. And Vic,
thanks for coming on, Vic. It was awesome having you on the show.
Guys, thank you for letting me on. It's been fantastic. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I was excited when you said you would come on here. Dude, anytime, you know, you got a movie you want to do or something, shoot us an email. You're always welcome. But why don't you, any other plugs you want to give or any Twitters or Facebooks or anything like that for you?
Well, you can be found on Facebook, Vic Sage. Currently, I've got a portrait of Patrick McGowan as my digital avatar on there. You can find me at VicSage2005 on the Twitters. And, of course, like Rob, you can find me almost daily on the Retroist. And come join us on Saturday for Saturday Frights, because I want more people to talk about that.
if you want to know what's going on, what Vic Sage is involved in, go follow him on Twitter. And this guy is a marketing machine. All the podcasts that he's on, what's going on, the good stuff on the Retroist, if you follow him, you'll be exposed to an entire world of stuff. He's always retweeting great stuff and all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, I definitely recommend that you go follow him on Twitter for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Good stuff. And again, really, thanks a lot for coming on the show. We'd love to have you back again. It was I had a good time.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. It's been fantastic.
And for me, I don't know if you want to find my stuff. Like I said, you can go to the Throwback Reviews. We got a host link, but pretty much just the Facebook page. And I do the at Throwback Twitter account. And I think that's about it. We'll probably announce the next episode coming up because we're kind of unorganized. We're not always sure what we're doing. But I'm going to put a guess out there, and I know I probably shouldn't do this, but I think we're going to do some sort of Atari episode possibly. I think we have a guest lined up.
All right.
So I'll definitely tweet that and put that on the Facebook when we know for sure what's going on with that. But yeah, it was a good time. And until next time, thanks for listening. All right. Beer done. Now back to water.